We're about to start. Are you ready? Okay, here we go. House Committee on Revenue for March 18th, 2015 will come to order. Colleagues and for our audience, I want to let you know that we are going to hold over yet again until tomorrow the hearing and work session on Senate Bill 611. There is some developing news, but it's not ready yet, so it'll just have to hold until tomorrow, and I apologize for those of you who may be here for the hearing or a work session on that bill. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2690. That's the one you're here for, is it?
Representative Gomberg told me just to be quiet, said he'd be the pretty face.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully he'll be here soon.
That'd be your staff.
And we'll get an explanation from the. We'll open the public hearing.
Oh, we can rotate.
We'll get an explanation from.
I can talk about it, Mr. Chair.
From Kyle, and and then we'll hope that he's here by then. Kyle, you want to let us know what this bill is about?
Sure.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Okay. Yes, so House Bill 2690, it would exempt from property taxation land that is acquired and held by a nonprofit corporation for the purpose of building on the land residences to be sold to individuals with income not greater than 80% of the area median income as adjusted for family size. There's also some cleanup language in the bill as well to statute, and then this would take effect for property tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2015.
Great. Well, it looks like maybe you're on, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Honorable colleagues, for the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53, and I'm glad to be a co-sponsor, although my name's not here yet, of 2690. The State Habitat for Humanity contacted myself and Representative Gomberg during the interim and discussed this idea. And I'm proud to be a sponsor. Habitat does a great service in providing housing for low-cost Oregonians, putting them in a house, starting them on a life that makes them more responsible citizens. What the bill does, Mr. Chair and committee members, is we're asking the cities and counties, and I know that's some burden, to not tax the property that Habitat has purchased for homes until the people they've sold the house and people are in there and paying more property tax than it would be if it was just the vacant land. So it's going to that way the counties and cities catch up, and it gives the bottom line is it gives Habitat for Humanity more money to purchase more home land to build more homes and put more people in home. You're going to hear from the Habitat for Humanity. I'm proud to have worked with them on several bills in the 2007 session. I worked with Speaker Merkley to be sure to exempt their restores, inventory, and property so they would have more money again to buy property and build homes. I'm trying to I don't want to waste your time, Mr. Chair. I was hoping that Representative Gomberg would get here. It is a good bill, and you're going to hear from Habitat for Humanity. I'm sure you're going to hear from the cities and the counties on the tax avoidance for the undeveloped land. So anything I can answer, I'll be glad to, but the experts are going to be testifying before the committee. And I do think it really serves a great need. And in the end, the cities and counties will get their tax money and get more when people are in there paying their taxes.
Thank you very much. Questions for the representative? We have four witnesses to be heard, and we'll go right to them. And if
I have a committee ways and means, sir.
Why don't you go? And if Representative Gomberg comes and wants to speak, we'll let him.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. He's on his way. Great. Shannonville. Oh boy, I'm going to mess up this name. And Sally. Is it Bill Hauer?
Bill Hauer.
I was close. Okay, great.
Did you want to
please identify yourselves for the record and then give your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for having us. My name is Sally Bovet. I'm the Executive Director for Habitat for Humanity of Lincoln County, located in Newport, Oregon.
And I'm Shannon Bill Hauer, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of Oregon.
And if I could go first, I'd just like to give you a little bit of an idea of running a very rural affiliate on the coast. This tax exemption clarification would be really wonderful for all of the small affiliates especially. It's really our biggest challenge to find buildable and affordable land. And if we're lucky enough to get that, whether we purchase it or it's donated, it can really be a cost burden to maintain property taxes on those and pay property taxes on those properties in the time that it takes us to get our funding in place and sometimes our development plans in place. That can cost a little bit of money because it's usually 2 to 3 years by the time we get the property and we get the home built. And in the low-income housing arena, every dime counts. So the little bit of money that we would be saving per house that we wouldn't have to, or excuse me, per property that we wouldn't have to pay taxes on for those few years represents a large percentage of the cost of a home build. In our county, we pay about $75,000 per house. And if we even had three properties that we had to pay property taxes on for 2 or 3 years, that really actually is about 18% of our home build budget. So it is impactful for us, especially for us really small rural counties. And I know that the we're looking for a clarification on this House bill.
Great.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, thank you so much for really considering this issue that's very important to the 30 Habitat for Humanity affiliates across the state. 22 of those are serving rural communities in Oregon. A lot of people, when they think of Habitat, you know, you think of the build site, you think of the key presentation. But for us in our organization, that's really just the beginning of the importance of our program. There's been so much discussion lately about the minority home ownership gap in our state and the importance of the equity that's accrued in home ownership that allows for that intergenerational transfer of wealth. We know that the children of Habitat homeowners are 18% more likely to graduate from high school and 64% more likely to receive post-secondary education. They have higher average adult earnings, and they're more likely to be homeowners themselves. So when we say that we're helping to break an intergenerational cycle of poverty, that's really what we're talking about. Many Habitat affiliates in our state, actually 18 now of the 30, including Lincoln County, are starting to offer home repairs that help enable seniors to age in place as well as new home construction. These affiliates are doing great, great work and are lean and mean. We also have some other home ownership providers in our state who do this work that is frankly pretty expensive per household, but again, we feel it's so critical to help break that cycle of poverty. So the NeighborWorks organizations and the Community Land Trust are all going to fall within these parameters, as well as Habitat for Humanity affiliates. Something a lot of people don't know, the language is up to 80% of the area median income. Statewide, the average median income served by Habitat for Humanity is 39%. Wow. So for a family of four earning about $22,000 a year, they are successful homeowners with our program. That is really what we're talking about, bringing a whole family out of poverty into stability so that their kids are healthier and succeed in school and life. That's why we're here. Statewide, we're on track to serve 2,000 families by 2020. So really, even though we're building 75 homes each year, providing those homeownership opportunities, and right now repairing about another 65 homes, it really adds up over time. It does make a strong cumulative difference. There are a couple of counties in our state where they are currently permitting Habitat affiliates to hold land tax-free. So there's this difference of understanding about Oregon Statute 307.130. We're coming to you today because those affiliates are lean and mean. Five of them are completely volunteer-run. Another nine have just one staff person. So they don't have necessarily a lot of extra bandwidth to advocate for locally for this tax structure. So we'd really like a statewide clarification that says, oh my gosh, acquiring land, that's absolutely critical to the mission of Habitat for Humanity. And also, I wanted to clarify that as soon as the building permit is active, the land is already tax-free. So we're talking about a pretty narrow window here, really, between when the property is acquired and that permit is active. But we aren't just sitting around doing nothing. We're getting plans donated. We might be partitioning the lot. So we really are performing our mission during that interim period. We're fundraising for the homes, too, and selecting the future homeowners and making sure they take homebuyer education courses through the housing centers. So also, because the homeowners we serve, they pay property taxes. So each organization who qualifies is going to improve the value of the property between 3% and 700%. And then that higher tax basis, that's what counties are going to receive revenue from in perpetuity. So we hope that this is a win-win scenario. We understand that there are some details to be worked out with the AOC and some of our other interested parties, and I think we're all very close to a shared understanding about how to move forward, and we're confident that we can do that quickly, because we also, of course, want to prevent bad actors from coming up and preserve the integrity of our tax structure. So thank you so much for really considering this bill and for the great work that you do every day.
Thank you. Representative Gomberg, we've heard from Representative Wisnett, and we're happy to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I apologize for being late. My notes said you were going to take this bill at 1:30, and if I start to tell you something that the good Representative Wisnett has already told you, you stop me and I'll skip ahead. But Representative Wisnett and I are very pleased to be here today and to present this bill on behalf of Habitat for Humanity and to support their good work. And I think the issue is pretty straightforward, that if they can acquire properties, then they can make those properties more valuable and a greater asset to the community, as well as addressing this important homeownership issue that they have been addressing on an ongoing basis. And the problem is they simply can't afford to hold those properties and pay property taxes on them or take advantage of opportunities when sale opportunities present themselves. So we brought this bill forward for your consideration with the notion that it is indeed a win-win and that it would allow Habitat and similar organizations to acquire properties, to hold them without paying property taxes, and improve upon them so that communities get more money in the long run. Ms. Vilhauer mentioned that there were some details to be worked out, and I know the people coming behind us are going to share some of the specifics, but I will tell you that a small intense group has been working on some of the questions that are as yet unanswered, and I wanted to give you a hint of some of the information to come. One of them is that there was a concern that perhaps organizations might hold these properties indefinitely, or at least over the long term. And so there's an amendment that's being crafted that says that they would be able to hold them without paying property taxes only for a period of 5 years. Now, again, when the building permit is issued, the property becomes tax exempt anyway, but we're looking at an exemption for a limited period of time, 5 years, with the opportunity for a 2-year extension in some circumstances. The second thing is, what would happen if one of these properties was being held by an organization and then sold? Mm-hmm. And that is to say, you know, we didn't pay taxes on it, and then they pass the ownership along. And so there is an amendment that would address that question. And finally, there's the topic of bad actors, or perhaps less good actors, people with good intentions, but might be involved in some questionable activities or the potential for some concerns. And so what we wanted to do was to put some definitions on the kind of organizations that would qualify for this exemption, and I think perhaps adding a filter that says that they have to have been involved in this similar kind of work at some point during the last 10 years. I'll let the people that follow me share those details with you, but I'll tell you that amendments are being crafted to address those kinds of concerns and tighten things up to avoid problems in the future. Bottom line, it's a good bill. It's going to make a difference in communities. It's going to produce more tax revenue in the long run, and it's going to put people in houses. I'm pleased to support it.
Thank you. Questions for the representatives?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mostly just wanted to ask about on the first page of the bill, new sections C and E, because it looks to me like most of the Habitat stuff is all on the end of the second page. Mm-hmm. But those two, the addition of rehab facilities and the definition of welfare program as well.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith-Warner, I apologize. When I came running down here, I brought the amendments. I didn't bring the original bill with me.
So it's that, that's not a problem.
Here we go. I'm sorry. Somebody would have it handy.
It looks like these are not on topic, and if she hadn't asked this question, I would have.
Why are these being added as part of this bill? Kyle?
Kyle may have an explanation for
Representative, yeah. If you look, it's kind of actually just moving around the definition. So in section, I guess it's lines 14 through 17, so that new section C, the rehabilitation facility, you can find that on the second page in lines 1 through 4 where it's being removed from there. And that's some of most of the bill. The only new portion really is lines 31 through 34 on the second page. And the rest of it I assume it's more of cleaning up
the
statute.
Editing.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
When LC has the opportunity to look at a statute, they usually take that opportunity to move stuff around and make it look prettier. And that's apparently what they've done. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think a fastidious drafter.
Yes. Yes. But I appreciate the question because it was exactly the question I had as well. Other questions for this panel? Representative Brunson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for your efforts on this. And I think you touched on a couple of my questions, i.e. we have Habitat in front of us, and I think we all know and appreciate the good work they do, but a broader definition of who would be a nonprofit and who could conceivably take advantage of this is something I think needs some work to flesh out, just so we can identify who we're talking about, and then how do we quantify nonprofit or low profit or whatever. You know, that's, those are other questions as well. But one of the other issues would be, would this enable the purchasing of undeveloped parcels of property, or would it only be lots that are ready for construction now? Because that, to me, I don't envision, you know, your organization getting in the business of property, you know, commercial development, i.e. residential, buying up a subdivision and then sitting on it for a period of time, which could create some real angst and land use within cities and counties across the state too. I think if we're talking about specific already identified residential lots that are directly for the purpose you envision, then I think that's one thing. But I want to make sure that we don't craft something that leaves an opening for a newly formed consortium, or maybe somebody that's already on the books, to come in and start buying up larger tracts of land, sitting on them. Meanwhile, it just kind of interrupts the whole growth of urban, you know, planning and that kind of thing within some of our communities. So
just address that briefly. Mm-hmm. One thing I will share is that we do fundraising in order to be able to acquire these parcels. They're sometimes just not the most desirable lots, mm-hmm, in a community, and so there is, it can be raw land with some infrastructure work needed. Mm-hmm. Especially in some urban communities, but again, they are not the most attractive lots on the market, mm-hmm, at that chance. And affiliates who are fortunate enough to purchase those build-ready lots, that's part of why this legislation is important. I actually worked at the Portland affiliate when they did their capital campaign, and we were acquiring land. We saw land that had the infrastructure on it for cheaper than we could develop it, but the holding costs were so high that we couldn't afford to purchase it. And we had the money for purchasing, so we had to pass up that opportunity and end up paying more per lot later. So that's an instance, I think, where this legislation would just help us to perform our work better.
Thank you.
Representative Benz, please.
Mr. Chair, do you have a period of time that you anticipate you hold these properties before you build them?
Yeah, and so something that we've really tried to consider is that we're talking about a statute here. So we've got our normal scenario and what happened in 2007, and we've tried to allow for both of those scenarios with the timing. So most Habitat affiliates, a best practice, if you're fortunate enough to be this affluent in your community, you have a pipeline of land for 3 years. That's about the time it really takes, actually, to garner the sponsorships and get the plans done and maybe do a partition and get your permits and build the home and sell it. So that three-year pipeline is really our ideal. I worked for a Habitat affiliate in 2007 when that happened, and everything had been so great and people had their land and were building so many homes a year, and then the economy went down, and when you rely on donations, it's kind of like musical chairs and you just stop where you are. That's why we're very appreciative of the 5 years. We think it allows for that and the opportunity to pay for a two-year extension in extreme circumstances, because we think it really captures both the fair weather and the not so fair weather scenario as well.
So yeah, I was just trying to get an understanding of whether, by virtue of not having to pay the tax, the period of time owning the land would be extended. Because it seems to me there would be a real incentive right now not to buy it, knowing there's this overhead feature that goes with it, and so you delay, and then you'd go ahead and buy it, and there'd be a short period of time that, under current numbers, it would be off the tax rolls. But if this bill were to pass, then that wouldn't be necessarily an issue any longer. Perhaps there are other issues that would force you to move forward with greater alacrity than might be the case. I don't know what other reasons are there. I don't want you suddenly turning into a land bank.
Right.
You have all kinds of spaces. I want you to tell me that's not the case.
Can I speak to that? finding affordable buildable land as a executive director for an affiliate is the hardest thing to find. So when you're lucky enough to actually find land you can afford to either buy or somebody's willing to donate, it's a very big deal for us because it doesn't happen very often. And so what you have to weigh is if somebody's generous enough to give you a donation, you know, the carrying cost is something that we have to worry about because can we afford to keep that property? But I can assure you that once we do get the property, we do everything to build the houses just as quickly as we can. We're really about getting families in homes. So to keep something longer than a couple of years, generally you're spending the time doing your fundraising, then you're spending your time doing the property lot development, and then you're going right into the build process. So I would venture to say the majority of the time you're going to have the properties built by the third year. You're not going to hold them, because that's really not what we're, what Habitat is trying to do. We're trying to increase the amount of homes that we have for families. And, you know, becoming a land bank isn't going to do that for us. But there are some bigger affiliates that might have larger pieces, and they're doing larger developments where it could even be a bigger financial burden for them as well. So I would like to assure you, at least for Habitat, nobody is really land rich in Oregon at all at this time.
Yes, please.
Right. Of course. Well, the issue is there's a really good reason not to buy it now unless you already have most of the other fundraising done, because you do have those carrying costs such as top property taxes. If this bill passes, that particular reason for moving faster disappears. And I'm not saying that, that anything's going to change.
Right. To speak to that, if I may, it's still really expensive to buy that land, and we still do rely on charitable donations. So it's just that's the balance, right? And we're really about serving those households. We are internally held accountable to that as well. So that's our aim. That's what we do. That's our mission. So if only we really did, you know, have millions of dollars for land acquisition to hold, but we have to fundraise all the time. Mm-hmm. And in fact, homeowner mortgage payments are a fair portion, and ReStore proceeds. They're in many instances 2/3 of an affiliate budget.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, for this question. How many of the parcels of property are donated as opposed to purchased?
Very, very few. Sometimes we can arrange a discount sale since we are a 501(c)(3) nonprofit and there can be some tax benefits to the property owner. We like to be creative. We'll work with you if you have some land you're considering donating. But it's unfortunately not that frequent. There are a couple of municipalities, like the city of Newburgh has offered some land to the local Habitat affiliate. It's wonderful. In certain instances, we have had some private donors, but usually that results in funds for the purchase of the property. Also, just to mention, our Habitat affiliates are incredibly resourceful about bringing shop dollars to the state of Oregon. Collectively, we've generated more than $6 million for our land purchase and development in our state that we as Habitat affiliates directly bring to Oregon. So that is a funding source that we like it coming to Oregon, and we think we're pretty good at that.
Thank you. Other questions? Could you give us a very brief overview of your financing plan? And what I'm thinking about is you've told us a bit about land acquisition. How about building construction? What does the family that's going to move into this property do, if anything? Do they pay for the property later? Can you give us just a quick overview of how this works?
Sure.
And then if they do pay something, what do you do with the money?
Sure. That's a great question. Our homeowners are sold the house after the house is completed for the cost of the home build, which would include any carrying costs on property taxes as well. So we get donations of materials and services and volunteer labor to keep the build costs down. But there still are some, even though we build them very affordably, there's still some costs. So we track all of those costs for the land, for the materials and services. That figure is what is used when we sell the home to the homeowner. And then we carry a silent second mortgage, which is that cost of the build and the market value, because those are always different because of the fact that we build the houses so inexpensively. So the homeowners are required to pay. They put in their 500 hours of sweat equity. They have to purchase the home at the end of the build. They also take
home buyer education courses along the way.
They take maintenance classes, home budgeting classes to be successful. I think our program really speaks for ourselves. We have a less than 2% default rate nationwide on home habitat homes, so we do a really good job of having these homeowners be successful long-term homeowners. And then we also require them to give back. It's kind of a pay-it-forward program. So, for instance, our homeowners, one that we just built 2 years ago, one of our homeowners is now working on our build we're doing now. So the goal is to help, you know, keep moving it forward so that we can build the next home for the next family.
And if I may, that principle, though, actually comes back to the Habitat affiliate. It's a designated use to purchase land and build more homes. So it's literally paid forward to help the next families. However, it's very expensive to build in the state. Land is very expensive, so we operate our restores, and we do charitable fundraising as well.
Thank you. And the purpose of the silent second?
It's to actually give them an incentive, and so they gain some personal wealth, but they can't flip the home. So what we do is at the end of the fifth year when they're in their loan, and if it's a 30-year loan, at the sixth year, beginning of the sixth year, they begin getting 10% of that different equity between the cost of the home build and the market value. So at the end of this 15th year, they actually get that equity in the home. And part of the program is we're trying to help have these families gain some economic wealth and get up to the next level of economics. And so,
and the silent second actually helps to prevent predatory lending as well.
Right.
That's a very good point. Thank you. I hadn't thought of that one. Mm-hmm. Other questions for this panel? Thank you so much, and thank you very much for this presentation. We have Aaron Doyle and Gwen Baldwin next. Is there anyone else who wants to be heard on this bill today?
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. I don't see anyone else. Thank you, Representative.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, Aaron Doyle with the League of Oregon Cities. We're very excited to be working with Habitat on this bill, on some of the revisions that address some of the questions that Representative Johnson and Representative Bentz have brought up about sideboards, bumpers, making sure we're dealing with good actors. We're not concerned about the Habitat of Humanity affiliates or some of the other groups that we've worked with on affordable housing issues in other areas. But what we want to ensure is that the return on the investment that we're making by foregoing revenue is paying off in actual affordable housing for folks that qualify. So we've expressed some of our concerns. We know that there's a dash one that has some drafting errors. I'll briefly touch on them. More focused on the dash one. There's a that is, of course, invisible to all of you. It's not on OLIS yet. It hasn't been finalized. But some of the things we're discussing are talking about which nonprofits can take advantage of this particular section of 307 and making sure that it's written properly so that it actually affects the time period that we're talking about, the between purchase and permit pulling. I'm not the tax person in our office. You've met Wendy. So we're working together. I do the housing piece, and I've worked as part of the affordable housing work group over the interim, and we recognize that there are a lot of different means for getting at the affordable housing crisis that I think all of our communities are facing, and we want to find positive ways to do that. We want to make sure that we're working to actually address those issues, and one of those issues is, of course, holding costs and land costs. I do land use issues too, so if you want to talk about UGBs, I'm your gal. The third piece is that when we do run into a bad actor, someone who holds the land and doesn't build and doesn't provide the thing that we're trying to incentivize, how do we recoup those costs of lost property taxes, be it a clawback or some other ramification? And not just if they don't build, but if they build and it goes to a median income or, you know, a wealthy family, you build a really nice house and you sell it to someone for and you make a bunch of money. That's not the intended purpose of these tax abatements, and we want to make sure that the purpose is met, and if the purpose is not met, that there's a ramification for that. Again, I don't believe that Habitat will run into that problem. The people that they serve are well below the income levels. I think there are other organizations that we've worked with, like Proud Ground comes to mind, that do a really good job of vetting their folks and making them ready homeowners. And we want to encourage that work and continue to work as city partners to the nonprofits, but we want to make sure if we're going to give them a guaranteed property tax abatement, like we're seeing here, that the work is being done for the purpose of the policy. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Shy of saying ditto, the city of Beaverton, as you know, Chair Barnhart, is very involved in the discussion on affordable housing at a number of levels, and some of which are going on in other committees. And so we're really encouraged that this conversation is really expanding to address and engage in some of those other conversations. So we have a holistic.
Did you state your name for the record, please?
I am so sorry. Bad form. My apologies, Chair Barnhart. Gwen Baldwin, City of Beaverton.
Right.
The value of these conversations is that we want affordable housing, and we want affordable housing in across Oregon in all sorts of communities. And nonprofit developers are the local jurisdiction's partners. I mean, important partners, valued partners. Habitat for Humanity, again, I don't think there's any question about the good work that they have done and that we trust they will continue to do. At the same time, it is not easy for a local jurisdiction to give up property taxes. They go for essential services, and they get people to where they need to go, and they provide the kind of urban services that we're proud to do. So when we give them up, we do it for a very specific purpose, to leverage a critical activity to get more jobs, to grow economic development, and to acquire affordable housing. So the bill as introduced gave us great pause because of all the things that you had raised, whether or not there was actually going to be performance, that affordable housing would be built and be built in a reasonable time, whether or not the house would be, the land would be held for a very long period of time, whether or not it would be sold for a very high amount to somebody else, whether it would be developed into something that could be market rate. We trust that our nonprofit partners aren't intending to do that or won't do that, but that's, the bill doesn't provide those parameters. So we are encouraged that these conversations are going on. We look forward to providing more robust ways through RS 307 to ensure affordable housing, and we look forward to getting a dash one to you that is going to do what needs to get done.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Davis, please.
Thank you, Chair. Do we have another panel of, or is this the final panel?
Yeah, this is it.
There was a question I had. Maybe Kyle, you have the answer. Of mention was made that when a building permit is issued, it does go exempt. I don't see that anywhere in the statute. So what's the magic trick that occurs when the building permit is issued?
I think that's correct.
Representative Davis, I believe this is really kind of an expansion of an existing tax expenditure.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing when the building permit has been issued, then it falls under the ownership and active ownership, really, of, in this case, Habitat for Humanity, who would be the exempt owner.
I believe it's just the same interpretation for charitable purposes.
Yeah. If you want to present to the committee, you'll have to come to the mic, because otherwise it's not on the record, and we need it on the record. Would you state your name again and
sure.
Give your answer?
Thank you. Shannon Bilhauer with Habitat for Humanity of Oregon. So, As currently interpreted, Oregon Statute 307, once the nonprofit entity has the active building permit, there's no debate about whether that property is being used for the intended charitable purpose. So that is how it is consistently for many years currently been interpreted statewide without debate.
Follow-up, Chair?
Yes, please.
And I think it was said that a few jurisdictions, county assessors, are interpreting that even when Habitat holds property, that does fall under the charitable, but some are not. So there's some discrepancy.
That's correct.
Okay.
And it is something that actually more jurisdictions used to also interpret it that way, but then as there's been some turnover in tax assessors, it's faded away and faded away. So that's part of why we're seeking the statewide clarification.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would note that on line 28, page 2, on I, it says acquire property and construct housing for resale to individuals at or below the cost of acquisition and construction. And I suspect that's the basis for this exception, because once you've started construction, then it may very well fall into that section. I'm making that up, but that would be how I would read it.
Thank you, and that really is our argument, that we are doing plenty of work before we get to that point.
Right. Thank you. Representative Johnson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but one of the lines of questioning I think that need to be fleshed out in the amendments is making sure that these projects are brought to completion within a reasonable amount of time, too, because one of the quote-unquote games that can be played is that you never quite get your 100% final from your local building official, and therefore you're never paying full taxes on that until that time. And that can sometimes, it could go out. I've seen it happen years. But there needs to be some sideboards to make sure that if this benefit's being offered, that they are brought to completion within a reasonably acceptable period of time as well. So there's just a lot of things that need to be considered here, I think, to make sure that we're not creating a loophole for...
Yeah, the proponents are listening to this, are you? He's suggesting that needs to be in your consideration. Are there other questions, comments? Representative Benson, please.
Thank you. And I guess that we're all saying the same thing, and wondering how much of the county and state's money should be invested in this admiral goal. That's the issue, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because some is good, too much is not. So... What is the control feature? In you guys' opinion, what are you looking at? Is it the kind of thing that Representative Johnson just mentioned, a fixed period of time within which this can happen, so you have some idea of how much you're investing in the form of not making taxes, or what?
Tara Barnhart, Representative Benz, I think the time restrictions is a big part of it. Making sure that construction is, in fact, completed within a set amount of time really limits what properties we're looking at that have nothing ongoing and haven't been put into the purpose. And so that's one way, but also I think what the counties have worked on with Habitat so far is also limiting which nonprofits qualify to those who have been doing this service. And I think that will also limit the number of rogue folks out there doing this or saying that they're going to do this and not doing it. We haven't thought of or even discussed the possibility of any other sort of like numeric cap on the number of properties. I think that would inhibit all of our communities from taking advantage of the opportunities to work with their affiliates. So I would be very concerned with 242 cities. If there's a hard dollar amount or something of that nature, we would be very concerned about that, because these are usually going to be city dollars, because we're looking at urban housing, and the residential areas primarily are going to be in cities. I know that the counties do have some of them, but we try to keep them in our jurisdiction pursuant to the state land use system. So I think those two things and then a clawback measure for those who aren't mm-hmm. able to complete mm-hmm. their projects within, right now we're looking at 7 years is the outlying most number. So 5 years with a $200 cost for a two-year extension has been offered. Kind of looking at that, knowing that once permits are pulled, there are additional timelines that have to be reached pursuant to the building programs that we all know and love with our building officials. So I think by having that timeline and working with specific partners who have done this in the past that have the reputation that they're going to accomplish it will get us to the point where we're not overextending this abatement.
Thank you. Follow-up?
No.
One of the points, of course, that's of benefit to cities, counties, and school districts is that once a house is built and somebody moves in, they pay property taxes, don't they?
Yes.
And I assume it's based on the value of the home as it exists at the time, with whatever adjustments are required by Measures 5 and 50.
Chairman Hunter, that is correct. And we also gain community members who become right. invested in their community, and we think right. that's also an additional bonus.
So if a lot stayed undeveloped, you would collect the property tax for the value of the lot, but not for the house that ended up being built there.
Correct.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony very much. And we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2690 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3001. And Kyle, go ahead, and we'll ask the good representative to come forward. Be prepared in a moment, please.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3001, what I would do is allow application for determination of real market value and assessed value of a property that was destroyed or damaged between January 1st and July 1st to be filed on or before December 31st. So under existing law right now, the application requirement date is by August 1st or the 60th day following the date the property was destroyed or damaged. So this would change that to December 31st. There is a dash one amendment that discusses requiring late filing fees if the application is filed after the current law window but before December 31st.
Thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome. Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, Medford. This bill has been brought forward more of a fairness bill than anything, because most people, when they lose a investment property or something of that nature, maybe they have a warehouse or an apartment complex or something, they're unaware that they have to go through these specific steps in order not to pay taxes on it, even though they have no asset whatsoever. So I have a letter here that I'd like to read from my some testimony from my county assessor, and for the record, he says, Mr. Chair, honorable members of the House Revenue Committee, my name is Josh Gibson, and I am the assessor for Jackson County. ORS 308.146 and ORS 308.428 have a specific deadlines that allow for the reduction of a maximum assessed value when the improvement is demolished or destroyed by fire or an act of God. The deadlines currently in place leave the hands tied of the county assessor and the Oregon Tax Court to be able to offer any tax relief for application filed after these deadlines. There are numerous tax court cases where these deadlines have been missed and no relief was allowed. A search in the state's tax court records indicate that since 2001, there's been at least 19 of these kinds of cases that have been heard on this matter. However, I believe that there are more examples that have not been pursued in tax court. The courts have no authority over the issue, and I believe the following excerpt from Stins versus Clatsop County offers a good example of the court's interpretation. Each year, the court receives a number of appeals from taxpayers who have missed the deadlines discussed above. There is no easy answer for solving the problem unless the property owner is advised of the relevant status by one of the firemen at the scene. The owner typically overlooks the tax consequences until the tax statement arrives in October. By that time, it is often too late to address the problem with the tax proration. Unless the fire occurs in the first 3.5 months of the tax year, it is too late to do anything when the statement arrives. It is always too late when the fire occurs in the first 6 months of the calendar year because of the application for value redemption is due by August 1st of the tax statement arrives in mid-October. Often the fire department does not notify the owner of the possibility of having the tax adjusted. However, that courtesy does not always occur and is certainly not required by law. The problem may best be addressed by a change in the law giving the property owners more time to make the application, but that is a decision for the legislative body to make. I believe that House Bill 3001 is a solution that, if in place, would have eliminated many of these examples, if not eliminate all future situations, but it does offer an expanded window of time when the property owner and the assessor can work together to remedy this without unnecessary use of limited court resources when currently the only solution is no solution. Thank you for your consideration, Josh Gibson, County Assessor, Jackson County. So you have there kind of a rundown of what he's talking about, but like I said, it's more of a fairness issue because, you know, you've lost maybe $1 million piece of property, mm-hmm. and you're probably not thinking about taxes about that time. You're probably thinking about, hey, what am I going to do next, you know? So anyway, we also have some input here from the assessor. We also, the assessors, we also have a dash one amendment, which we've worked out with LOC and the assessors themselves.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Doug Schmidt. I'm the Polk County Assessor. This bill deals with a time of difficulty when property owners have lost part of their property. There are strict limitations on when they can apply, and typically this is speaking directly to the ability to have their property value redetermined as of July 1st versus January 1st. Typically, that happens. You have 60 days after the date of the damage or destroyed property. So if it happened on June 30th, you'd have until August 30th. But a lot of times, people don't realize that that provision is out there. We try as best we can as assessors to notify property owners when we see that there has been damage on their property, but we don't catch them all. What this bill would do is would allow the assessors to correct the roll as to the value that was on the property in July 1st of any given year if there was damage or destruction due to act of God. So, and it would allow us to process that even if the application for that was submitted December 31st, which would then, it helps the taxpayers understand, well, why am I paying tax on a building that isn't even there anymore? So I believe that this does resolve some of those properties that the owner wasn't aware of the provisions and statute where they could get the tax relief on this. There is a, in the Dash Amendment, there is a provision for a late for a filing fee of $200. Part of that is that after the roll is set, we have to do roll corrections to value, and it takes more time and effort of the counties to do that. And I would say probably that in most cases, the $200 is much cheaper than the full amount of their tax bill with the property that isn't even there.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Davis.
Yeah, and I apologize. Can you walk through the timelines again of assessment when the bill is sent and the timeline that this bill would change?
Okay. Chair Barnhart, Representative Davis, members of the committee. The value that we tax on is set as of January 1st mm-hmm. of any given year. The tax year is July 1st through June 30th. Mm-hmm. So that means whatever was on the property, January 1st is what they're paying tax on. So several years ago, there was a provision made that if there was a destruction or damage on a property due to act of God, that the homeowner or the property owner could make application and have their assessed value changed from January 1st to July 1st. Mm-hmm. And that's what this bill is referencing. But in that, there are limitations on the time period. It's supposed to be 60 days after the loss or by August 1st, whichever is later. This would extend that out with the late filing fee of $200 to December 31st. They could make application mm-hmm. to have their assessed value determined as of July 1st, which would represent then the loss of the on the property. So as an example, say if on June 30th you had your house, $200,000 burnt down, and if you made application to have it reassessed as of July 1st, we would look at basically what was the value of that property as of July 1st, which was probably just bare land. And that's what they would be taxed on for that tax year instead of the January 1st value of $250,000,
$300,000. Follow up?
Yeah, yes, please.
Thank you very much for walking through that. Now, the tax year extends between the 2 years. It's July 1 to June 30th. That's the tax year, correct?
Representative Davis, that is correct.
So for a loss that were to occur the following year, let's call it February, so you've got a partial year of the property having the home on it,
mm-hmm.
but then you've got February 1 through June 30th of a piece of bare land. Does this bill affect that situation at all, or is it still fully assessed for that tax year?
No, it's not fully assessed. That's where the proration of tax comes in through the act of God. You can have, during the current tax year, you can make application, and if you have the damage in February and it's not repaired until July, then we would prorate the amount of taxes during that tax year for that loss. It's two different scenarios.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to be heard today on House Bill 3001? Going twice. Gone. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3001. Colleagues, I've already indicated that we are carrying over Senate Bill 611 until tomorrow. There's nothing new to report now, but I will. I promise you that your revenue officer and his assistants are working very hard at my request to get us ready for the next stage on this bill. We will report whatever we have for you tomorrow under public hearing or work session. Paul, have I done what I need to? I have. Thank you. With that, committee's adjourned.